We made this.
Welcome to the Starlight Ballroom. Hey.
Hello and welcome to Shipwrecked and Comatose, the podcast about Red Dwarf here on the We Made This podcast network. My name is Mark Adams, and I am your host for this special episode between series 6 and 7 of our coverage of the television series Red Dwarf. With me at this time, first up, is Carl Bryan. Hello, Carl.
Hello there, Mark.
And we're also being joined by Matt Latham. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Mark. I'm glad to be here.
So we are looking at something we probably should have looked at much sooner on in our run of Red Dwarf coverage, considering the utter tat we have looked at instead. We're looking at... What? Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong.
I wouldn't say tat. I'd say fun deviations. fun deviations from what perhaps you would have expected us to have covered at this point.
I mean, that is a very diplomatic way of putting tat. Yes, we're looking at the Smegouts, which was the second blooper reel video release, VHS video release, that has become probably one of the most important parts of Red Dwarf culture, in my opinion. I think they gave us something that no other telly show was really doing. Bottom Fluff happened after this, and It'll Be All Right on the Night was stuff that was across the board. Auntie's Bloomers was after this. I would argue Auntie's Bloomers is probably inspired by this. And do you agree with me on this, that Smegouts and Smegups was really fucking pioneering and really clever and probably made them a lot more money than they thought it would?
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, it's, I think for the, in these cases, it's a case of knowing your fan base. They know that the Red Dwarf fans are rabid for Red Dwarf content. And releasing this, because I mean, this is an hour, and I think the previous one was an hour.
Mm.
And also, it's a sign of the times that lucrative, let's release a not too hot for TV, but, you know, exclusive, you'll never see this on the telly video in time for Christmas, because I remember, I think I got this for Christmas, along with, you get stuff like, I remember having a load of these, like say, Bottom Fluff, the Red Dwarf Smegups and Smegouts, and then you get stuff like, you know, Lenny Henry's live show or something, which he couldn't put on the TV because he said fuck.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's them trying to work out DVD extras before DVD extras was an actual thing. So I think they got,
so it's kind of like
bonus content. Yeah, like before the word content, as we believe content to be a thing, is now a thing.
That makes sense. Yeah, I think it's definitely pioneering stuff. But Matt, you have never actually seen this up until this point. Is that right?
Well, technically, this was the second time I've watched it, because when we recorded Smegups, I thought we was doing both, so I watched this one as after the previous one, and the most notes that I made was on this one, the most research I spent was on this episode, and then when I was about to record, and then Carl and Colin were like, no, we're only doing Smegups, I'm like, shit. So this is the second time that I've watched this. I think, well, in terms of like the Smegouts as like an edited whole, I think the Smegups as in like the individual, that series stuff, I think I saw bits and pieces from the DVD extras, but I've never seen this as like a collection. And my main takeaway from it is that I always just thought it was just straight kind of blooper reels, but it is kind of like a compilation of stuff you would find on DVD extras on the bonus disc, just shoved away into one bit so everyone can access. So quite a few things I've never seen before.
Because this covers series 1 to 3's bloopers,
yeah,
and the Smegups, which we've already looked at, where Carl and I were I don't know, we were in stasis or something. Mm-hmm. That covers 4 to 6, and on some versions, some of 7. And I was genuinely surprised that they actually had as many smeg outs as they did, because whereas I would guess the smeg ups was planned, I would have thought smeg outs was kind of like a cash in, a unexpected sequel to the smeg ups.
I was surprised watching it again, because I'd forgotten that this one is purely 1 to 3, in that in the way that they've been with series 1 to 3, with like they never re-released it on video or DVD for a long time.
Mm.
Maybe with the first one being purely after 3, is them going, let's not crack into the vault because it's all sealed away and we have no intention of going back in there. But then after the first one did so well, like, break out those tapes, see what we've got. Because also I can imagine that, because some of it looks like it's on film, it's probably not, but I can imagine they're probably on a different style of tape to the later series. So it might have been a bit trickier for them to actually be compiled.
So was this done during series 7? Because the production, particularly of, we'll talk about the Crichton bit later on, but it looks like Crichton or Robert Llewellyn in his like series 7 get-up.
It's not. This came out in 1995, which is kind of the hiatus. And this, I remember this specifically when it came out. This is the first real appearance of Craig Charles after his trial. He got acquitted in 1995, and I think this was like one of his first things back, because Series 6 was 1993, and Series 7 wasn't until 1997. So this is during the hiatus years, while they were waiting to see if they could actually go again.
That's fascinating. So I think maybe the Lister scenes, which we will come to, were almost throwing him a bone after he went through that incredibly traumatic time where, you know, he was accused of something he didn't do.
Yeah, and I think the footage of him at the convention as well was probably one of his first public appearances, which is, I think, is probably why it got filmed as nicely as it did. Because I think in other footage I've seen, it's all been sort of like someone with a camcorder is showing it, or it's not that one. But in this one, it's shot like maybe this was intended to get released in full.
Maybe. I think they'd have made some money from that as a separate release, to be honest with you.
I can't remember. Is it on any of the DVDs? Because I know the Smeg Ups and Smeg Outs got put on the DVDs, but did the convention...
I had a look through them because I was trying to find if they had these as they are edited. But I don't think so, because I think they cut up all the individual series smeg ups. They cut up all the specific smeg ups for that specific series. So Red Dwarf 1, the bonus disc, you've only got like those kind of bits for just series 1, series 2, etc, etc. And I think you kind of lose a couple of the continuity bits with Crichton. I don't know whether they are on bonuses anywhere. Convention stuff, I'm not 100% sure. They feel familiar, but then again, I might be confused by the fact that I saw it when I watched this many months ago, accidentally.
Yeah, I think you're right that they did chop up the smeg ups, and it kind of makes sense, but I also think it's sad that we lost the original VHS format. But there is a huge amount of extra stuff, including commentaries and things like that, on the Blu-ray, because I eventually bought that after Red Dwarf went off Netflix. And I know I'm the specials king, but I do think we should probably at some point look at these DVD extras, because there are loads and loads and loads.
Yeah, you might leave this with other potential specials ideas, considering the amount of considering the research I've done for certain bits of this. So yeah, be careful, Mark.
Well, you know, I do like a special. So I'm going to vaguely look at this. It makes more sense to me to look at this kind of as almost like I would do a list of what goes on in the episode. So bear with me and do feel free to distract me if you need to. And the first thing I put was nice new credits. I love that they actually bothered to do a specific theme tune credits for the Smegups. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, they never do out by halves. If there's one thing you can say about Red Dwarf is that when they're doing stuff for the fans, is they don't phone it in. Is
no,
they will do credits. That, like you said, the shots of Crichton, the quality's gone up. Whether that's regards to they watch the previous one and you see an outtake from that previous tape, it's quite dark. That previous one, Crichton sat there, so maybe they've gone right. We can up our game there. Maybe as well, the technology came through a bit more at the time as well. Because I think this might have been just as digital video editing started to come in a bit more. Just from my own personal experience, that sort of started coming in for me when I was learning how to do stuff about 97, 98. So maybe this is what is coming in there. Like, oh, we can light in better and it can look a lot clearer. And maybe they got a bit more money on this one because the previous one did so well.
I think all of that is true, Carl. And I think the return of Crichton and also the Lister cameo is an important part of why this is such a cool piece of Red Dwarf history, I suppose. And the Smegups was completely pioneering. Whereas obviously this is a cash-in, I still think it's a very, very well done cash-in. And the problem with what you were saying about the better production quality of the Crichton hosting elements of it is it highlights how crap Series 1 to 3's production was.
Oh, yeah. You look at Series 3 Crichton and they hadn't fully figured out his look yet, I think. Well, to be fair, I don't think they ever figure out his look because it's no spoiler to say that Crichton looks very, very different in the Dave.
Yes, he does.
Era. He looked.
Oh yeah, I've seen the pictures.
Oh yeah, he looked. Yeah, no, he looks. I thought it wasn't Rob Llewellyn the first time I saw him, but yeah. So they never really kind of fix on a permanent look for Crichton. Then again, that's the thing where it lasts 30 years. I mean, you have to do is look at the evolution of the Klingons in terms of makeup for Star Trek to find that they're constantly kind of changing the look. Or making the look slightly more naturalistic. But like the big difference being that the visual of Crichton that we have in our heads is very much the one that's hosting. So the kind of shape of the shape and the build of the mask and the body and like the slightly chunkier kind of upper body where it feels it's not massive, it's not slim. And that's the look, I think, that's the kind of visual memory, I think, that we have. It's the nostalgic right in the childhood, quick plug, kind of roasting to ideals that you see when you think of Robert Llewellyn in the Crichton suit. Whereas then you look back at perhaps Series 3 and it's like, it feels very different. The makeup still hasn't been kind of tweaked. And then you get to tweaked and then you get to the kind of, I think Series 7 and Series 8 actually match the kind of look of feel of Crichton we got from the 4 to 6 era. But then you kind of, as Robert Llewellyn's gotten slightly older, I think, and the mask changed, they probably had to use a new cast, they probably lost the mould or something. He's never looked the same since. Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
In this tape, there's a very clear definition between the two when they show the deleted scene from Series 3.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Or it looks bad.
The flesh covered, the flesh coloured bodysuit.
Yeah,
we'll come to that. I want to do this chronologically. You're both jumping around, and you know I get upset.
Sorry, Mark.
Sorry, boss.
Shall we very briefly look at the elephant in the room? That is, this is not as funny as Smegups.
No, it's not.
I don't think we are saying anything controversial by saying that it's not as good.
No, but I think with Smegups, you're dealing with a crew of people that are much more comfortable with each other. And in this one, it's they're just together for the first few years and they're still probably getting to know each other. And also, it's well documented that Chris Barry and Craig Charles didn't get on.
True.
And I don't think you see that much in this. I think you kind of... I watched it going like, oh, they seem very chummy to say they very famously didn't get on. But it's almost like that. This is the first bit where they don't know each other very well, so they are getting on, and then it just gradually maybe disintegrates and then comes back again.
Mm. And I don't know. I get it. You need to fill an hour, But fucking hell, they over-egged the tongue-tied thing, didn't they?
Yes. Yes, they did. And when... Because I thought initially, again, because it's been a long time since I watched it, I thought, oh, we're going to see, like, tongue-tied bloopers. And it doesn't. It just does the intro. And then I'm like, Charles Organs probably would not let them put any mistakes in there.
That's probably true.
But, yeah, it's they do go for it. And then it's like, oh, the full... It's such a 90s way of phrasing it. The full multimedia version of Tongue-Tied. I was like, what's this again? And it's got the inserts of Claymation, which I'm guessing is from fan-created, I think.
Yeah, I think we covered that, didn't we?
Did you? How far did you get into that? Because that's where most of my research is on.
Okay, so we did talk about this when we looked at the Tongue-Tied video, but there's no reason why we can't talk about it again. So jump in, Matt, and give us your notes.
Yeah, because the bit that threw is I can't remember. Was this version in the Tongue-Tied special that you did with the animation?
Yes, some of that animation was in the Tongue-Tied extended video that Danny John Jules did. So they used it here and they used it in that after. It was just fan-made. It wasn't... No one was paid for that.
Yeah, because it threw me. Because I didn't bat an eyelid at it until I noticed in the credits that it was animated by, I think, a Katie Catlow, a Lynn Catlow and a Bryony Catlow, age 14, age 10. Yeah, and that's
adorable.
Yeah, and that led me down to pretty much figure it. I ended up Googling them and then discovered that they're all kind of like animators now.
That's nice to hear that they're all animators now. This was like the first kind of one of the first steps into doing it.
Yeah, well, for example, Katie Catlow has been an animator for 25 years and has done commercials for Heinz, TK Maxx, Velvet Issue, The Nationwide, Wrigley's, The Sun, Sport Scotland, Motorola, The Warehouse Project, HSBC, IT Sport, McCain Oven Chips, Jura Whiskey, Dulux Paint, Hanna Blast and Samsung, together with music videos for artists London Grammar, Run the Jewels, Father John Misty and Two Fingers. TV series includes Ooglies, Rasta Mouse, Ra Ra the Noisy Lion and The Little Boo Dragon. I was also part of the animatronics team on Harry Potter, Order of the Phoenix, and Children of Men. And that's just one of them.
Holy shit.
Yeah. In 2013, I was one of the five international winners of a script writing competition launched by Bombay Sapphire. So this is from Katie Catlow's official site. And I think the studio she's got formed is a studio called Studio Doc, which spelled D-O-K, which has got a load of animation stuff on. There's just loads of kind of that claymation style animation, a lot of directing music videos, stop motion stuff. And I was like, and I ended up going this. Yeah, this is where my unintentional research. I just kept going through, you know, like when you're on Wikipedia, and you just end up for like a minute, and you end up spending half an hour just keep clicking on stuff. Yeah, so I ended up just
rabbit hole there. Shit.
Yeah, I went down rabbit holes and stuff, and like the amount of stuff that they've done is ridiculous. Now the other two. Lynn Catlow and Bryony Catlow, I think, they formed a company called Two Bears, which is an animation studio. So they've got their own kind of animation studio, and they've got a website and their portfolio. They've worked for brands such as Sage, Lakeland, Honda, Innovate and Trivago, as well as the NHS and smaller boutique brands. And they've done commercials for online and TV as well. There's a lot of kind of the portfolio for the other two sisters as well. And I just find it interesting that the fact that potentially what we're seeing is like one of the first instances of like a family of animators getting into animation because of animating a claymation version of the cat from Red Dwarf and Dwayne Dibley.
Awesome.
That is awesome. We went nowhere near like the level of detail that when we did the Tongue-Tied video. So I'm glad you went down the rabbit hole so I didn't have to.
Yeah.
So one thing we get in the Smegouts that we didn't get in the Smegups is Norman Lovett's Holly bloopers. And I was absolutely delighted with them. I think they were probably my highlights of the bloopers were the Norman Lovett stuff. And he's got, naughty boy, he's got such a potty mouth.
It does make me laugh that it's one of the first things we see is him doing the distress call and he just completely botches it and his realization that he's sworn I thought was so beautiful that, ducks out of shot. Because he's pretty much sitting next to the audience, isn't he? He's just kind of sat there on his own. So, yeah, it's quite nice where he's like, oh, I'm not normally rude. He's like, you are. I've heard your stuff before.
And I think what's really interesting is it does give you like an insight on how Holly was actually filmed as well, because, you know, the way he moves out of the screen and stuff like that is something obviously you wouldn't see on the main show itself. And I think that's like a kind of like cool little look behind the scenes as like a fringe benefit.
Yeah, it's, I don't know why I thought this, but for some reason there's the Smegout where they're doing the, trying to repair the drive room, and they keep looking back at the screen to talk to Holly. And I didn't remember if that was superimposed on or if he was actually on the screen. So it was nice to see that he was on the screen, but they kept cutting to the actual shot that they must have recorded straight off the camera.
It never occurred to me before when, like, is he actually there? It never occurred to me that, or is he off screen that they're interacting via a video link, or is that too high tech for the 80s? I never really thought about that before. I don't know whether there was actually interacting with him there and then. And they must do, unless he was just slightly off screen and then interacting. I can't remember.
Yeah. I think it changed from series to series. There was somewhere he was just kind of sat in a little booth on his own, but he was still on the studio floor. And then I think there's ones where they said, oh, he was off in a room backstage somewhere. I think that might have been the latest series. I think I might have heard him complain about it on a behind the scenes before, that he was like, he was miles away from everybody.
That does feel a little bit like a lonely existence sat in a room on your own being projected onto a telly.
Yeah.
And I think another thing that I really enjoyed, again, because it was a peek behind the curtain, was how different Danny John-Jules' voice is to the cat's voice. And he's like, talking like a cat, and then suddenly, my name's Danny. It's really brilliant.
Oh, apples and pears.
Yeah, it was. I really enjoyed that. And I think, obviously, we've seen him in other stuff, but to the immediate transition was very, very funny, and potentially funnier than some of the other Smegups because of the way his voice is so completely different.
My favourite one of that is where he comes, it's one of, he's got the white suit on, he comes running in, he's like, hey, how am I looking? And he puts his hand in his pocket for his mirror. And he just seemed like he's trying to style it out because he can't find it. And then he realises he's not got it. And he just goes from, how am I looking, to, oh, right. And turns around and walks.
Yeah, I think stuff like that that is funny and a blooper, but also gives you a cheeky little look behind the curtain as well. They're my favourites of all the Smegups across both of the VHSs. And I wanted to ask you, have either of you been to France recently and gone to a service station?
No, but I know where this is going.
So when I went to France on holiday with my family in the late 80s, early 90s, they definitely did have horrible, horrible squat toilets where you put your feet either side of a hole, you crouch down and you shite into it. They definitely had that because I remember it because it was a traumatizing part of my childhood. This gag about the French lavatory squat, is it outdated or do the French still have these barbaric bogs?
Don't believe it's the case. I think maybe in some areas like truck stops or something it might still be the case, but I don't think so anymore, no.
I'm only 43. In my lifetime, the French had toilets where you were expected to crouch and shite. I mean, it's a childhood trauma returns from that gag.
I'm pretty sure that I did see a toilet like that in Hiroshima about 4 years ago.
Yeah, I seem to have a memory that the Japanese do still have them in places. But I think everybody's, obviously we've all seen things like the Gadget Show now where there's the, you know, super toilet that massages your buttocks individually and then gives you a spray afterwards of sweet perfume. But yeah, I think
I have not seen that and I want one.
Oh man, the Japanese toilets are ridiculously high tech. Yeah. Like you've got privacy mails where you push a button and it'll start blaring music to mask any sounds you might make.
What, the plop plop noises?
Yeah, or any explosions of gas.
I love this.
I want a Japanese toilet.
I want a Japanese toilet now. But yeah, so it just a noticeably outdated gag is where I came from on that. I wonder whether there's people listening who are like in their 20s who are like, they've got to be lying about squat toilets. No. I do feel in general, though, with some highlights like that and the stuff we talked about with Danny John Jules and Norman Lovett, that these bloopers are less memorable and quotable in the Smegouts compared to the ones in the Smegups. Would you agree with that?
I do, actually. I find the things I remember or that stuck in my memory more is stuff from the Dimension Jump.
Mm.
For some reason, it's always stuck in my head, Craig Charles going, oh, it was a nightmare from start to finish. I am not a synchronized dancer. That stuck in my head for a very long time. And I don't know why, but just hearing him say that was just really funny to me. In that, you know, you kind of expect people to go like, what was your time like on the show? Oh, great, great laughs, great mates the whole time. Then, but you ask Craig Charles, it's like, no, it was a nightmare. It's like, yeah. To wear high-heeled white boots. That stuck in my head, probably more so than the actual Smegouts themselves.
Mm. And there's actually not that many actual Smegouts, which is understandable, like we'd said, that they basically broke out some old tapes in a desperate attempt to find them. And the fact that they found some that are actually funny is really good. And I don't have that much to say about the Smegouts themselves, other than I want to talk about why they bleeped it. It was a 15 rated video. So why did they bleep it?
I think in some cases it's funnier because you can see what the word actually is. In some cases, I'm pretty sure they bleep words that aren't that bad. Like, yeah. I'm sure there's a couple where Norman Lovett says balls that they bleep it.
Yeah, and I think maybe you're right that bleeping it and making it almost taboo when they didn't need to does make it funny. Yeah, good point. Well made. I'll buy that for a dollar.
I'm going with the, I think there's a inherent fun, like humour that can be had by having, by the bleep noise. I can't remember, I'm drawing a blank on where it is, but I've always had this memory of either a film or TV show where there's a scene where someone starts bleeping, where they just constantly overuse the bleep noise to comic effect. And I've always found it quite funny when they do that.
Was it Harry Enfield that did that?
I can't remember. But I remember it's something like what the beep and the beep, a beep, a beep, a beep, a beep, a beep, beep, a beep, a beep, fuckers. And I can't remember where it's from.
Fell with me as well. I mean, one of the sort of more popular, I don't know, trends on YouTube is to do the, just take something that's completely innocent and put beeps in it.
Yeah.
And like, you know, there'll be an Obama speech or there'll be something from a film that's just like this, that and the other. And it'll be like, we love painting, but they'll beep out paint. And so just to make it sound dirtier than it is.
Oh, I love beeping.
Yeah. I could beep all day long. You know, it's just that kind of thing. So nothing more that me and the guys like to do, to go out to the woods and have a great time with each other painting. But yeah, beat. And yeah, it's, I think it is funny. I mean, you've got to look at the flip side of it, which we talked about at the beginning, is the other one is Bottom Fluff, where they really didn't beep anything.
No.
I think that was kind of expected out of Rick Mail and Aid Edmondson. I don't think it was expected as much out of the crew of Red Dwarf.
No, and Bottom Fluff was an 18. I vividly remember that because I owned this 18 video and I wasn't 18 and I was like,
yeah, same.
I also think it might be a fact that I think, again, as we can see in the convention a bit later on, is that I think the general audience for Red Dwarf, I think they kind of knew that it was probably a bit more of a general age range for it, and it was probably more accessible for a younger audience because it does... I mean, it's not really an adult series, and the jokes aren't really adult. It's quite cheeky, teenage kind of jibery, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
Whereas perhaps if you can make the comparison with Bottom, I remember watching Bottom when I was much when I was younger, and I always remember this exchange where in the street that I used to live in, there was a few kids that were older than me, like into their like very mid teens, like 15, 16, and they ended up talking about Bottom, and the kid and the one kid looks at me and goes, Winter goes, you watch Bottom. Hey, do you understand any of it? Right. And they started using a bit more of the kind of subliminal adult terms in it. And me being what, 11, 12, didn't. But I think Bottom had a slightly older target audience and probably wasn't meant for the audience that would have perhaps caught Red Dwarf.
Fair.
So I think perhaps the bleeping was also, I think one, perhaps its main intent wasn't for comedic effect. It was probably for a case that, right, yeah, there's going to be kids watching this or young teens watching this. We don't want to get bollocked by parents saying, my 12-year-old son bought this video and now
they're on smack.
Yeah. And now start saying that everything's cack. I mean,
my mom didn't like it when I started saying cack around this age. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. She got very upset. I remember one of the few times she ever swore was I said cack, and she took me to one side and she said, Mark, I'd rather you say shit than cack. And my brother and I have quoted her with that fucking phrase for the rest of our lives. And it's still one of the things, the like family private jokes that we find the funniest is the one time my mother ever said shit to me. It was wonderful. She must have really kind of agonized over about whether or not she wanted to say the word shit.
I mean, you've also got the very marketing thing of we want as many people to buy this as possible because Red Dwarf's not on the air at the moment, so we should really aim for a 15 or a 12 rather than Bottom, which was still on the air or still doing the live.
Probably true, yeah.
Yeah, Bottom was definitely doing live stuff in 95. I don't think Series 3 there. I don't think Series 3 there at that point. Wasn't it like 93 to 96 or am I?
Something like that. I think the first live show was, while the show was still on the air, I think it was like between 2 and 3 or 1 and 2.
Yeah, the last live show was in 2003 because I went to see Bottom 5.
I'm very jealous that you got to see Bottom live.
I saw it in what, yeah, I think it was one of the last ones in the tour actually. Because they played the Civic in Wolverhampton. It was at the back, on like the top row in the back, and Rick Mayall basically just, because we were like, what, 17 or 18 at the time, being absolute bellends, shouting, have a wank, and all that bollocks. And Rick Mayall went, shut your mouths, you vile youths. And then Aid Edinson just went, you have to admit, he's got impeccable timing. And it was just before the moment in Bottom 5 where they have the power of a time machine through Richie's generating electricity via masturbation. It was just before that. and in my head, you talk about Quotable Dwarf, one of my Quotable Bottom Live is that I always seem in my head whenever something kind of happens that kind of coincides anything in my, I'm going, you've got to admit he's got impeccable timing, and I've always remembered that.
The only other thing that I have in my notes about the Smegouts themselves is, let's not dwell on this, but there is some unfortunate 90s ick where when they make a mistake, they then immediately transition into a rather unpleasant Japanese gibberish accent thing. It wasn't nice. It was the 90s, and I sincerely doubt that any of the actors involved in this would do that now. And yeah, it's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, agreed.
I just noticed something on my handwritten notes. One thing that was brought up, I think, I can't remember which mega it was, but I think it might have been when Crichton / Robert Llewellyn's talking about Craig Charles's golfing prowess with the golfing stuff. I think he used the term constipated elephant, or that might be to do with the animal ones. And for some reason... Right. The use of the frame constipated elephant immediately made me think about whether... Okay, we're jumping ahead a bit. And now I'm talking about the episode Pete, part 1 and 2. I was just wondering whether they've always had the idea of a massive animal and it's bells in their head And part of me is wondering whether they've been wanting to do that for years, and whether the constipated elephant gag or line that Robert Whelan has, I wonder if that's kind of related to them wanting to do something with a big animal crapping everywhere. And I wonder if that would eventually lead to the Pete the T-Rex.
Maybe that's what led to the split between Rob and Doug every series. Doug's like, and then the elephant craps on him. No, Doug, we can't afford it.
We're not having crapping animals.
Yeah. We're better than this.
It's funny you say that. I think to some extent that does happen quite a lot in long-running franchises. There's an idea that they really like, and they can't work it. They can't work it. They can't work it. And then 10 years later, what about if we put the crapping elephant in this? Yeah. So I think I would suggest you're probably right on that one, actually, Matt.
Yeah. But then he goes, we've got the money. We can do better than elephants. What about a dinosaur? What? A dinosaur on a spaceship? Oh, my God. Did Pete influence Doctor Who?
Maybe.
I do love the fact of that episode of Doctor Who. They just nail it on the head before the credits. Dinosaurs on a spaceship. It's like, there it is. Yeah.
Yeah. You can just, that's just hit me in the head going, wait a second. Did Stephen Moffat steal that from Red Dwarf? Okay. We're jumping ahead. We'll probably talk about that in your, when we actually get to see it later. But yeah.
Yeah. Let's do that. Yeah. Let's do that. So let's move on and talk about the other stuff that isn't bloopers on this VHS release. The first thing is the backwards footage played forwards. And I think we've discussed this quite a lot, the backwards footage and what they say on it. But at the time of this release in 95, I think you said, Carl,
it's
still something that we wouldn't have had access to. And there's like a thing at the time, it was very, very cool.
Yeah, it had never been seen. This was a big thing. This was probably like of legend within Red Dwarf fans of, oh, Arthur Smith says this, and then he says bollocks really loudly, and you get the feeling they just said to Arthur Smith, say something, just do something. As long as you get the hand gestures right and the pointing, you can say what you like, because no one will ever ask for this footage. Oh dear, somebody's asked for the footage.
What I quite like is that on the time of recording a couple of days ago, you had the interview with the Brewers, and one of the anecdotes that they said was that they actually convinced their school to get audio editing software to reverse.
Yeah. I was impressed by that.
Yeah, and like there was that, and they were just saying about it, goes, I'm talking to the one sad bastard that managed to play it backwards, and then them as kid teenagers going, oh yeah, we're those sad bastards. I just but I think again that was probably before, again, preempting DVD specials and perhaps the technology not being there, because guaranteed you'd be able to do this straight away within, if this aired now, guaranteed on YouTube, 45 minutes after the episode aired, someone would ripped it off BBC iPlayer, flipped it, and then stuck it on Twitter going, oh, look what I've done.
Yeah,
and I think there's almost competition these days to do stuff like that, whereas in the mid-90s, this was actually incredibly rare and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I remember is it used to happen in wrestling a fair bit when YouTube kind of kicked in, is if they had a mystery wrestler and they were using a voice changer on it, someone within like a couple of days would have decoded it and worked out who it was. So it's, I mean, this, the whole concept now with blooper reels, a lot of movie studios will put their blooper reel on their official YouTube channel.
Yeah.
It's still popular even to this day. And one that springs out to me is the show Supernatural. They will put together one every year and put it out, and it's normally like 10-15 minutes, but they'll play with it. They'll actually shoot bits to go with it. Like they'll shoot like an alternate title sequence where it's made to look like a 90s sitcom or something like that, and they'll actually make it into a thing like they have here. Blooper reels are still like really popular, because you want to see, like, I don't know, Captain America fall on his arse, or, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch completely lose it, or something like that. It's
Benedict Cumberbatch completely naked, did you say?
Lose it, not naked.
Man. Oh, okay, sorry. Sorry.
Calm down, Mark.
I know, I probably lost you just as I hit the end of Benedict there when your mind just went off on one.
So one of the other things is a 10 more most asked questions, which I get it. You needed to fill an hour. It's not as funny as the Smegups one. And it is just continuity stuff mostly. And we've talked about continuity enough on this podcast. And I don't know. I think it just isn't as good as the Smegups one, is it?
I don't think they'd do it now because of the culture that surrounds like continuity and tying stuff up.
Mm.
I think if they did it now, they'd actually try and attempt it to answer them properly.
Yeah. I mean, I did laugh at, have you ever had a girlfriend? I did laugh at that.
Yeah.
It's a very 90s joke though, isn't it?
Hmm.
It's a very 90s joke. And it's, again, it's something I don't think they do now.
No, because, I don't.
Yeah, it's the like stereotype, isn't it, of living in your mum's basement, a thing that they're kind of like playing on, which hasn't aged well, I don't think, but...
I don't know. I think there's a different culture these days that you probably feel quite sorry for someone like that who's clearly very lonely, probably has mental health problems, and you wouldn't take the piss.
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't acknowledge them very much. In fact, you probably acknowledge them a lot less than you would have done in the 90s, you know? So, yeah, it's an odd one, isn't it? It is an odd one.
I did quite like the appearance of Lister, or Craig Charles as Lister. And again, it's a very weird kind of fourth wall breaking kind of in character, but being aware of the characters thing. But
yeah.
I did quite like the Lolita page. Like with someone like my mom's about that, and then like this is like I had the book upside down. I did quite like that answer.
I like the fact that in character, Lister knows that he took the right page because he knows what's on that page. Oh no, I took the right page. I didn't take the wrong page.
Yeah, and
well, the fact it's Lolita is a bit.
So Lolita is a thing, and again, it wasn't a thing in the 90s, or it wasn't as much of a thing, and I think everybody kind of knows the Lolita thing. Should we talk about the strip poker scene, the deleted scene?
Yeah.
You touched on this before. I quite liked Naked Crichton. As a concept, I thought it was quite funny and quite clever and cool to see what was underneath the plating.
Yeah, but Mark, I've got a feeling that anything with the word naked will automatically pique your interest.
I mean, did you not feel the same then? You didn't think it was fun and silly?
I think it's silly. It was very off-putting. I don't know if I liked the kind of joke of the flesh-coloured bodysuit.
Wasn't it supposed to creep you out? Isn't that kind of the point of it?
I don't think it was, Mark, no.
Oh, okay. I thought it was supposed to be kind of weird and creepy. I mean, you're both right. The scene wasn't funny, unfortunately.
Why was he so greasy looking? Why did he look wet? That was the thing that I couldn't get my head around.
Which episode was this supposed to be part of, and when was it filmed in the production order?
I think it's Body Swap, because it's the abandoned ship.
Right.
I think it's where the bomb's going to go off, and they just decided it wasn't. I think, and I'm sure I've read this somewhere, that the reason they didn't use it is the bodysuit, the effects looking a bit weird.
I'm trying to remember where that abandoned ship joke come from. I can't remember when that joke was, which episode that was in. It's not the abandoned shop, is it?
No, it's not that one. That was
this is not a daffodil.
That was. This is not a daffodil. No. Many Wurlitzes are missing from my database.
Yeah.
It's not that one.
Where it's this is not a drill, this is a drill.
That was a good gag.
That was done in voiceover over like a shot of Starbug, and I think that is replacing this.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, Crichton's neck thing just waving around just looked a bit weird.
And again, going back to my earlier point, I think it's where they hadn't really figured out Crichton's look.
Yeah.
Because it looks practically skinny. I think, and less clunking. I think it's before kind of Robert Llewellyn nailed the kind of weird over-the-top limb movements. So he's a bit too human-like, and yeah, I don't know.
He's talking like a human as well. I think he is as well when he's sort of saying, this isn't fair, I haven't got as many clothes as you. I don't think Crichton would say that.
Yeah, I think I think it's still, because I think that he probably saw through most of series three where he hadn't fully worked out the voice yet. I think it was like series four was when I think Crichton was kind of fully formed. Yeah, I don't think it kind of, it doesn't feel like it's 100% in character for Crichton either.
Yeah.
Or not at this
point. I think they were right to cut it.
Yeah.
I definitely think they were right to cut it.
Although the cat's outfit is sharp. It is very sharp. And the hair as well. And the facial hair. It's the black and white with like squiggly signatures on it. And he's got the silk handkerchief that's like the inverse of the outfit. Oh, it's a really good outfit. It's one we should get you, Mark, one year for Christmas.
I mean, I wouldn't say no to that for sure. So we've talked about the tongue-tied video already. They do the most popular scene, which is the shrinking boxers, gay sex, terrible, terrible snake scene, which, you know, we've already covered, but it is worth saying it is a fantastic fucking scene. And what they do is they add a smeg out to it, which at least means it's just ever so slightly more than blatant filler.
Oh yeah, with like a peek behind the curtain where it shows you, like, where the film the erupting polymorph, which I thought was quite nice, and I do quite like how it's kind of like edited into that, and I kind of wish they did a bit more with the practical effects where they'll just like feed in the actual scene and then cut to how the sausage is made, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
They do it when the DVDs roll around. You see a lot more of the, especially with Starbug, like a lot of model shot outtakes. And that would have been a nice little like musical montage to have on one of these.
Didn't they do that with Smeg Ups, where they were about like when they couldn't like drive the Starbug out of the hangar?
Oh, the cargo bay doors. Yes, yeah. They did.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the ones on the DVDs are ones where it's like one-offs. Well, I don't know if you remember this, the famous one where they realised that butane is being used, but they didn't twig until they lit it. it takes off one of the special effects guy's eyebrows.
Fuck's sake. So, the other major thing on the VHS release is the stuff from the Red Dwarf convention. We get some stuff from Craig Charles, Norman Lovett, and in the costume, Robert Llewellyn. And I really did like this element of the VHS.
It's the, I think, like Crichton being as in character as possible as well, I really appreciated. Because he always refers to Mr. Charles.
Yes.
He never referred to him as Craig, and he always seemed to be in, well, I think, I'm assuming if I remember correctly, he was like pretty much in character, using the Crichton voice at least. So he's kind of improvising. So he's kind of almost like almost Robert Llewellyn, but having a very Crichton way of delivering it. And I thought it was, I think it was generally the great bit of it.
It shows the establishing shot that it's in a Ramada Inn. The idea of Robert Llewellyn in full Crichton get up, getting into the lift with like some businessmen, just being like, morning, morning. Here for the convention? No. Oh, okay. Right.
I think this character that he plays here is probably not that dissimilar to the kind of weird amalgam that is the Crichton host of the Smegouts as well.
True.
Yeah, it's, I mean, credit to him, because the voice is fairly different from his own. Obviously he does it during shooting, but keeping it all day, it must be tricky for him to hold it and keep character, especially when you're kind of riffing with a live audience as well. And you're not really on camera. You're being filmed, but you're not like on the show. So it's and Craig Charles with the double denim. Woof, that is. It's still a look.
It's a look. It is.
He's got the. It's still. You can smoke indoors. He's there with his Marlboro Lights, just powering through them.
I know. I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. And I think particularly for people who like started going out post-smoking ban, something like that would be like a whoa, whereas for us oldsters perhaps it's less of a shocking thing, and I hadn't spotted it until you pointed that out.
I worked in a nightclub when the smoking ban came in at midnight and the club was open from 8 till 2. So my boss was stood at the doors. And it wasn't him being nasty. This was this is for me, this moment. And it was sort of like 3, 2, 1. And I'll never forget, he flung the doors open and went in like, put those cigarettes out now.
Amazing.
Wow.
He just did it to amuse himself. It was great.
My memory of that was that I was quite late to kind of nightclubbing. So I was like, 20, I was 21 before I started going out dancing at the nightclubs as the youth used to do. So this was like late 2006, early 2006. It was like halfway through 2007. And like you come back and your clothes be smelling the smoke. And the week after the ban came in, it was very weird because you could see a lot, even though it was quite dark and flashing lights, you could see a lot more of the room. I was like, I don't remember the room being this big. And one of the first memories I have is that you could smell when people were farting.
Mm. Yes, a lot of venues had a problem with the fact that the smoke smell masked the fact that their toilets stank out the entire fucking venue. I remember a couple of venues in Manchester that I loved. I went in like a week or so after the smoking ban and it smelled of piss. And I was like, I had hair down to my arse at that point. And I remember weighing up whether my favourite venue smelling of piss was a good exchange for the fact that my hair didn't stink every time I woke up after going out.
See, we, in the club I worked at, we didn't have that issue because our toilets were quite good. But what we had was, like say, you had people farting, or because it was a rock club, so people were dancing, you'd be like, whew, everyone in here needs to put on some links. You know, it's just kind of, it was pretty bad. I could see why that the people in the toilets with all the perfumes and stuff came in probably not that long after.
Mm. Anyway, but a lovely tangent, but shall we move on?
Yeah.
The insight on the American pilot from Robert Llewellyn was really, really cool. I think at the time I would have been fascinated by that. But other than that, just I loved, like you said, that he was kind of in character and in costume.
It's the most positive take on the US pilot you're ever going to hear.
Yeah, and that's what I'm getting at. It's very kind of that was the time kind of thing, you know?
It's too fair. I do appreciate that for years I've always said people just need to be honest and actors need to be honest and just say, oh, I did it because I got paid. Instead of trying to go all this like kind of whimsy bollocks saying like, oh yeah, I found it because the script was kind of good, blah 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 blah, and that's why I, Alison Hannigan, did date movie, blah blah blah. And yeah, and rather than, I like quite like Robert Llewellyn just going, and they paid me so many pounds.
yeah. And Norman Lovett's stand-up was genuinely funny, and I know I have managed to talk for nearly an hour. And I haven't mentioned my cat, but my cat does that bum shuffle thing that he does, that he talks about in his stand-up.
Mm-hmm. I'm also
naughty girl.
I'm also quite surprised we've also been talking for an hour and you haven't even mentioned the Goodman, the apocalypse anecdotes that Robert Llewellyn says in character about when they're riding horses. Because I've got that written down where he goes, and Mr. Charles goes, let's hit it and see what happens.
The switch from his Crichton voice to his Craig Charles impression, it's so seamless yet so jarring.
But brilliant in the same time.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I think the whole thing's great. If you want to talk about the Craig Charles stuff as well, his poem is genuinely great.
Yeah, my note on this was like, it goes, oh yeah, he's a poet, I forgot.
But you can see it as well when someone says, could we have a poem? You see his brain just go, come on, Craig, you've got one. You know you have. But not that he's not got one, but he's got thousands. And that he's just like, what's appropriate? There's kids in the room. I've seen him do a couple of them in footage. And yeah, there is footage of him on like Wogan back in the day. He'd do poems.
I think it was before he was cast as well, because I remember, I think in the 3 million years documentary that me and Kurt covered, just before The Promised Land, I think there was footage of him, I think on perhaps either Wogan or something, just before.
Is it when he's dressed up in about cricket?
Oh, I can't remember.
Mm. And I do remember at the time that I'd been, at this point, I'd been to one Doctor Who convention, and it was the greatest experience of my entire life. And I do remember at the time I wanted to go to this, but I couldn't afford it. And so having this footage on the Smegouts was kind of great, but also I was like, I want it to be there.
The question I've also got in terms of that was, there's a bit where, and I'm not unsure about how I feel about it, where there's the kid, he must be about what, 9 or 10, asking Craig Charles a question. And Craig Charles is a bit unsure about how to answer. And I think, so like a kid is either kind of slightly, either slightly nervous or doesn't convey his question properly. And Craig Charles kind of isn't sure how to react.
What, doesn't the kid ask something like, has Holly survived his computer rashes or something like that? And it's like,
you're right. Let's be fair, though, that kid has a voice that sounds like he smokes more than Craig Charles.
I wonder if that kid is still a fan and you've just insulted him because he listens to this.
If you're out there, I hope you work in voiceover work. He had a really deep, raspy voice that shouldn't be coming out of a 9-year-old. And I think part of that's probably what threw Craig Charles off.
Maybe. But yeah, all in all, I think that the convention stuff was great. And I was surprised by that. I thought it was going to be shite and filler. And I don't feel like it was. I think they edited 3 nice little clips about that in.
Yeah, I quite. It was probably the bit that was stayed in my memory because I was struggling to remember quite a lot of the Smegups, if I'm honest. So it's the more of the extra stuff I kind of remembered with. I think it as well, because it adds, well, it is filling out time as well, but it's a lot more interesting to see, like, again, the bonus footage that you would never see. Nowadays, you would have this kind of stuff be put onto YouTube and easily accessible. This is probably on YouTube. There's probably other, right, you've probably got whole panels. You might, there's probably a full uncut version of this on YouTube somewhere, which Mark will do a special about in about 3 years. But,
there must be at least 6 people in the audience with a phone who've recorded the whole thing, and it looks good.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? But I love the kind of stuff that we do, like the Smegazines, that's kind of a reminder of the culture and the technology of the time when we were young and Red Dwarf was young. But no, I love stuff like that, almost like historical stuff, our own lifetime, but historical stuff. I've always found that kind of thing fascinating since doing podcasts like this.
Mm-hmm. It makes me think I need to wear more denim.
You do need to wear more denim. Everybody does.
Everybody's denim, Dave. I'm trying to find the Smegouts on the Red Dwarf wiki, see if I can figure out where that is and whether there is actually an uncut version on YouTube.
Because it makes me wonder if was it, because it's not the first one, is it? Because they covered some on the previous tape, didn't they? Because now I think when they do because we covered it in the Smegazine episode, because it was like they had like Hattie Heyridge there, and that was about it, wasn't it? There wasn't that many of the cast, so this must have been a big thing, like it was the first one Craig's done.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously he was acquitted and found not guilty, but he must have been on a bit of a re-establishment tour at this point, because he was, you know, he was coming back after there's even a quote from him when I was reading about it for my research for this, where he said, like, guilty or not, that is now against my name and you'll see it there for the rest of time.
Yeah, that's grim.
So getting out there, so I mean, the first people who are probably ever going to welcome him back with open arms is the Red Dwarf fan base.
True.
I mean, he looks like he's enjoying himself anyway, but I think this was probably a very big thing for him in coming back. And you see it as well, like when Robert Llewellyn / Crichton tells the story about him hitting a horse to see what happens, and Craig Charles starts laughing, Robert Llewellyn like puts his arm around him and sort of gives him a hug. So you may not even, there might have been something behind the scenes there where Craig Charles might have been absolutely bricking it going out there to like face an audience of his fans and like Robert Llewellyn to back him up.
So, gents, this has been lots of fun. You know I love a special, but I think this one was one we really needed to do. So, Matt, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on pretty much Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, under the username Pick a Disc, which covers my main podcast, which is where I talk to people about music, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm also a kind of host. It's currently on hiatus, but I've been currently affected by Mark Adams-itis and working on specials towards a podcast called No Book Club, where myself, Kurt, who you might know, he's one of the other hosts over here, I think, and a guy we know, Tony something, cover the TV show Yellow Jackets. So you can find us there.
The Boss Man.
Yes, the Big Boss Man. So you can find us there.
Carl, what about yourself?
Oh, I've not got a lot going on at the moment, to be honest, Mark. But you can keep up with all of the nothing I've got going on at the moment at allmylinks.com/Mr. Carl. Hopefully there'll be some new things on the horizon. And I do understand I'm going to be upcoming on an episode of Right in the Childhood soon.
You are.
Where I'll be talking about a certain snack food based kitty cartoon.
Okay.
You will. So talking about Right in the Childhood, that is my podcast about kids TV. Matt will have been a guest on that podcast by the time this episode airs. He looked at Reboot, and indeed, Carl is going to be joining me for an episode on Samurai Pizza Cats, but there's over 40 episodes on stupid kids telly and old men watching it. So why the hell wouldn't you want to listen to that at RITC Pod?
I refute the claim of being old, thank you very much.
You're over 30, that counts. I am also the host of Chucky Vision alongside my friend Dev. Chucky Vision is a podcast about the Child's Play and Chucky franchise. And soon, hopefully, like autumn, there'll be a series 2 of Chucky. But in the meantime, we're doing monthly specials in a similar vein to the tenuous links that we do on this. It's all very me. At Chucky Vision on Twitter. If you're looking for me, it's at Mark Adams HC on Twitter as well.
And the HC stands for hardcore.
No, it stands for humanist celebrant.
Oh, fine.
So thank you for listening to Shipwrecks and Comatose. And until next time,
Imagine it could stand for hardcore.
I'm so hardcore.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast, was created and produced by Mark Adams and Kurt North. You can find us on Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod, and we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network, which can be found online at wemadethispod.com or on Twitter at We Made This Pod.